A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here to take big ideas and really distill them down to the essentials you need. Today, we are tackling something absolutely foundational to American thought, to American culture, the spiritual life of African Americans.
Yeah, it's one of those topics where, you know, if you've tried to understand U.S. history or politics, you hear this phrase all the time, the Black Church.
Right.
But that simple term, that idea of one monolithic Black Church, well, it hides so much, centuries of debate, internal conflict, philosophical brilliance, really.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why we're diving into Eddie Escalade Jr.'s fantastic work, African American Religion, a very short introduction.
Which ironically is maybe the only short thing about it, because the perspective shift it offers is huge.
It really is. It pushes us, you know, past the easy stereotypes, the gospel choirs, the powerful sermons, that kind of image, and forces us to see this incredibly complex, intricate spiritual landscape.
And it couldn't be more relevant, honestly. Glaude argues this isn't just history. This religious tradition is a dynamic, constantly debated way of thinking about freedom, about justice. And it's still shaping things right now, political movements, culture, everything.
So our mission today is to unlock Glaude's core idea, this concept he calls the discursive tradition.
Mm.
Get your head around that, and suddenly you have this powerful lens for understanding race, culture, politics, social movements, basically America today. Okay, so let's start with the guide himself, Eddie Escalade Jr. Who is he?
Well, he's one of the most prominent public intellectuals out there today. He's the distinguished university professor and chair of African American Studies at Princeton, a major voice.
And what makes his perspective so unique? He's not just like recounting historical facts, is he?
No, not at all. He's really acting as both a philosopher and an interpreter from within the tradition. He combines that deep historical research with philosophical tools, especially American pragmatism.
Pragmatism. Remind us what that entails.
It's basically asking what works. How does an idea actually function in the real world? What are its consequences? So he's looking at religious ideas not just for their theology, but for their impact.
He's often called an insider critic, right? Someone who deeply understands and you could say loves the tradition, but isn't afraid to point out its internal conflicts or compromises.
Exactly. He challenges its pieties, its contradictions, and that lets him treat African-American religion not just as faith, but as a vital, living intellectual heritage.
An intellectual heritage. I like that.
Yeah. He insists it's as central to the American story as, say, the writings of the Founding Fathers. And he draws these direct lines from historical theological debates to, like, how we talk about democracy in crisis today.
Okay, let's get into the book itself, then. Its main argument. Glaude is pretty upfront. This isn't some kind of encyclopedia, right?
No, definitely not. It's an argument. It's designed to equip you with a new way of seeing, a new analytical framework. And it demands we ditch that convenient but ultimately false image of one single Black church.
Because that single image just obscures what's really going on.
Precisely. His central point is that African American religion is better understood as a dynamic, often really contentious, discursive tradition.
Okay, discursive tradition. Sounds a bit academic, maybe. How should we think about that?
I like to think of it as like a huge, centuries-long, sometimes loud family argument.
Oh. Mm.
Yeah. Everyone's gathered, generation after generation, debating the same core, vital questions. What does it mean to be Black in America? What about suffering, dignity, freedom? How do we survive and find meaning facing systemic oppression? It's an ongoing conversation, an ongoing argument.
And framing it that way,
yeah,
it really broadens who gets to be part of that conversation, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Suddenly, it's not just, you know, Baptists or Methodists. If the argument is about dignity and meaning, then you have to include Black humanists, nationalists, members of the Nation of Islam.
And crucially, cultural figures, too.
Yes, like blues singers. Glaude brings them right into the heart of this theological, philosophical conversation. They're all wrestling with those same fundamental questions about life and struggle.
All right, this is fascinating. Let's trace this argument through history, then. Glaude starts right at the beginning. In slavery, what he calls the New World Matrix.
Right. And the key thing here is that it wasn't just enslaved people adopting the Christianity of their enslavers. It was much more creative, more syncretic.
Syncretic, meaning a blend.
Exactly. They brought diverse West African beliefs and practices from Yoruba, Hongo, other groups, and fused them with Protestant Christianity. Glaude calls this process creolization. Think of it like a spiritual melting pot. but one forged under intense pressure.
And what emerged from that pod wasn't just imitation, it was something new.
Totally new. It was a unique faith deeply rooted in resisting oppression, often practiced in secret, you know, in the invisible institution, hush harbors, praise houses.
Places where they could create their own meaning.
And develop this powerful theology of liberation. They saw themselves in the story of the Israelites in Egypt. God wasn't distant. God was active on their side, preparing deliverance. This faith was inherently political from the start.
Then comes emancipation. And the invisible suddenly becomes very visible.
Yeah, you see this explosion of independent Black institutions. The African Methodist Episcopal, AME Church, founded by Richard Allen, is a prime example. Building these institutions was itself a revolutionary act of self-determination.
But, and this is key to Glaude's argument, building institutions immediately created a core tension, right?
The defining tension, really. The struggle between prophecy and pragmatism.
Okay, break those down. Prophecy is?
Prophecy is that radical call for immediate justice. Speaking truth to power, demanding fundamental change, rooted in that liberation theology. Think firebrand sermons, direct confrontation.
And pragmatism.
Pragmatism is about survival. It's the need to build, to maintain, to navigate a deeply hostile white society. It's about creating stable structures, schools, banks, social networks, the practical stuff needed for community life.
And that pragmatic impulse led to something called respectability politics. What was that about?
It was a strategy, basically. The idea was, if Black people demonstrated impeccable morality, piety, discipline, conforming to middle-class white norms, then white society would have no choice but to grant them citizenship and respect. Prove your worthiness.
Now, Glaude is quite critical of this, isn't he? He sees it as necessary, perhaps, but also costly.
Very costly. Because while it was a survival tactic, the price was often silencing the tradition's more radical prophetic voices. To be respectable often meant censoring forms of Black expression, maybe certain music, or more emotive worship style things that might seem undignified to outsiders.
So the argument becomes internal. Do we focus on surviving quietly and proving ourselves, or do we risk everything by speaking prophetically and loudly?
That's the constant push and pull. And you see it evolve again during the Great Migration. Millions move north, south to north, rural to urban.
And those established, more respectable denominations, they struggle to connect.
Often, yeah. They didn't always meet the immediate raw needs of migrants facing urban poverty, loneliness, trauma. There was a kind of cultural disconnect sometimes.
So a vacuum opens up.
Which gets filled by new, often more expressive forms. You see the boom in storefront churches, the rise of holiness and Pentecostal movements that really emphasize the direct experience of the Holy Spirit, spirit possession, healing, much more visceral.
And it wasn't just Christian forms filling that gap either.
Right. This is where you see new non-Christian movements gain traction, like the More Science Temple or Father Divine's movement. They offered entirely different narratives, rejecting the white Christian framework altogether, offering new identities rooted in, say, an imagined Moorish or African past. It shows the incredible adaptability of this discursive tradition.
Okay, let's jump to the period most people associate with the Black Church, the Civil Rights era. We tend to picture unity, right?
We do. And Glaude definitely affirms the crucial role of figures like Martin Luther King Jr. King masterfully wielded the tradition's prophetic language of deliverance, justice, resistance. He's the embodiment of that prophetic wing.
But that wasn't that simple.
Not at all. King faced significant opposition within the Black religious establishment. His main foil was Reverend Joseph H. Jackson.
Who was he?
Jackson was the powerful, longtime leader of the National Baptist Convention, the largest Black denomination. He represented the conservative, pragmatic wing. He strongly opposed King's direct action tactics, favored gradualism, law and order, even promoted a kind of Black capitalism.
Wow. So he saw the church's role very differently.
Completely differently. For Jackson, the church's job was spiritual guidance, institution building, maybe economic uplift, but not radical political disruption. He thought King was reckless.
That is such a critical point. The church wasn't a monolith marching behind King. It was the actual site where these fierce debates about strategy and theology were happening.
It was the battleground. And that internal argument intensified even more with Black power.
Enter Malcolm X.
And the Nation of Islam. They delivered this devastating critique. Christianity, they argued, was fundamentally a white man's religion, used to make Black people passive, to make them accept suffering on earth for a reward in heaven, demand justice now, not later.
How did the more traditional Christian thinkers respond to that powerful challenge?
The main intellectual response was the development of black theology. Thinkers like James Cone were central here.
What was their argument?
They essentially reinterpreted Christianity from the perspective of black suffering and struggle. They argued systematically that God is not neutral or colorblind. God takes sides. God is revealed in the struggle of the oppressed. Jesus, therefore, stands with the marginalized against the oppressor. It was a radical reclaiming of Christian symbols.
But Glaude argues theological responses weren't just happening in seminaries or sermons.
Exactly. This is where he brings in the blues. He elevates it, calls it a profound theological counterpart to the sermon.
Theological? How so?
Because the blues, he argues, offers a different kind of spiritual wisdom. It's maybe more secular, but it confronts the absurdity, the pain, the suffering of life head on. It doesn't always offer divine rescue.
It just names the pain.
It names the pain, stares tragedy in the face, but finds a way to live anyway. There's a kind of tragicomic hope in it, laughing to keep from crying. It's about resilience, about finding meaning within the struggle. That's deeply theological work, Glaude says.
Okay, fast forward to the contemporary scene, the post-soul era, as it's sometimes called. What are the arguments now?
Well, one major development is the rise of megachurches and the prosperity gospel, often associated with figures like T.D. Jakes.
That feels like a huge shift.
It is. The emphasis moves dramatically from communal liberation and social justice towards individual success, wealth, health. The message becomes, God wants you personally to prosper, to be rich. It's a very different kind of pragmatism focused on individual achievement.
And how is that playing out? Is it universally embraced?
No, it's highly debated. And it exists alongside another major trend, the decline of traditional mainline denominations and the significant increase in African Americans, especially younger ones, identifying as religiously unaffiliated, the knowns.
The knowns, right.
So Glaude leaves us asking, what new arguments, what new forms, maybe cultural, political, maybe explicitly religious, will this generation create? How will they continue this discursive tradition?
It really reframes the present moment. Okay, let's synthesize. If we boil it down, what are the core themes or messages we should take away from Glaude's analysis?
I think theme one has to be diversity over monolith, just hammering home that internal difference. Baptists, Muslims, humanist artists, they're all in this conversation.
And the reflection for us. Whenever we hear a group label, any large group, we need to immediately question it. Ask.
Yeah.
Okay, what are the arguments within that group? What's being hidden by that simple label?
Exactly. Which leads to theme two, the prophetic versus pragmatic engine. That constant tension between fighting for radical ideals and, well, just keeping the lights on and surviving institutionally, that's not a flaw. It's the source of the tradition's energy and evolution.
You see that everywhere, right?
Yeah, I do.
In any organization, even in our own lives.
Yeah.
How do you stay true to your values while dealing with the messy realities of the world?
Absolutely. Then for me, theme three, the blues as theology is just so powerful.
Yeah, I agree.
It validates spirituality beyond the sanctuary walls. It tells us that profound wisdom about life, suffering, and resilience can be found in culture, in art, in the ways people make meaning out of hardship.
And theme four, the unseen labor. Glaude consistently highlights the foundational role of black women. They were the organizers, the teachers, the sustainers of community life and movements.
Yet so often denied the visible leadership roles.
Right. The takeaway is crucial. Look beyond the person on the stage, who's doing the essential, often invisible work that makes everything possible. We have to recognize that foundational labor.
Glaude's writing is also just potent. He has these phrases that stick with you. Maybe we should touch on a couple of key quotes or ideas.
Good idea. Let's start with his definition of the whole project. African American religion is not a static set of beliefs, but a discursive tradition. An ongoing argument about what it means to be black and human in the United States.
The power there is shifting focus from passive belief to active argument. It frames the search for freedom and meaning itself as a kind of religious intellectual work. It's a continuous struggle, a continuous conversation.
And then on the blues offered a way of looking squarely at the absurd. It is a profoundly theological music.
Yeah, that just opens things up. It suggests spiritual depth isn't just about finding answers. It's about honestly facing the hard questions, the contradictions, the pain. The blues' ability to hold sorrow and joy together, that's real spiritual engagement.
And finally, his point about respectability. The politics of respectability often sought to present a good Negro to white America, a performance that, while strategic, could also stifle radical critique.
Oof. That captures the dilemma perfectly. Survival strategies are often necessary, right? But they come with costs. They can force internal censorship, limit the range of expression, and sometimes push those who don't fit the mold to the margins.
So how can listeners, use this understanding in everyday life? What are the real-world applications?
Well, application one, analyzing current events. When you see debates today among Black leaders, activists, clergy, maybe disagreements about protest tactics or the role of religion in politics.
You're not just seeing random conflict.
Exactly. You're seeing the latest chapter of this centuries-old discursive tradition. Knowing that history adds so much depth and context to understanding contemporary arguments, it's not new, it's ongoing.
That leads right into application two. Nuance over stereotype. This book is like an antidote to lazy thinking. When you hear talk about the Black community doing this or thinking that,
you immediately know it's more complicated. You understand you're looking at a diverse landscape with internal debates, different philosophies, not one single mind. It forces much greater pair and nuance.
Definitely. And application three, guiding activism and leadership. Claude's work shows that healthy movements actually need both kinds of voices.
Right. You need the prophets pushing for radical change, and you need the pragmatists building the durable structures. Internal debate isn't failure. It's often a sign the tradition is alive and grappling with hard truths.
Hmm. So reflecting back on the book, what was the biggest takeaway or surprise for you?
For me, it really was Glaude's treatment of the blues. Seeing it positioned not just as music, but as a serious form of theological reflection.
Right.
That was eye-opening. It makes you look for spiritual meaning in places you might have overlooked.
Yeah, I get that. For me, it was really grasping the historical depth of that prophetic, pragmatic tension, especially seeing it play out between figures like King and Jackson. It just demolishes any simple heroic narrative of the civil rights movement.
Right.
It forces you to see the complexity, the internal struggle, the real political maneuvering within the movement itself. History is always messier than the summaries.
Absolutely. Ultimately, I think Glaude gives us more than just history. He reveals this profound intellectual heritage, this tradition of critical thought about justice, freedom, and what it means to be human that has profoundly shaped America and continues to do so.
Understanding this tradition really is key to understanding the ongoing American experiment. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.